KXRN-LP.
Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach.
Member supported.
KXFM on 104.7.
KXFMradio.org.
Straight up at 8 o'clock, a Friday edition of the Mornings with Ed Show. Welcome to an absolutely gorgeous and beautiful Laguna morning. 8:30 this morning. Lisa Farber, you know her, you love her, you can't live without her. Here she comes to tell us everything happening in town. And Friday morning at 8 o'clock is always special for me. Paula Hornbuckle Arnold, Laguna Beach Chamber of Commerce, always brings in someone interesting. And what you've done today is magical. You've combined the artist's corner that we do on Mondays and brought a fantastic artist I've been dying to meet here on a Friday morning. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning, Ed. Nice to see you this morning. It seems like every Friday morning is a spectacular morning in Laguna Beach.
We've been nailing it the last few Friday mornings.
We really have.
You look like you've been hiking or you're ready to hike.
I'm headed there, yes.
Okay. So how is the hiking going for you?
You know what? I'm getting fitter and better and faster, which is all good. I had to take pretty much 8 months off. I had an injury last year. So I'm just getting back to hiking and loving every moment of it.
Right. And when you injure a foot or a leg or something, man, that just takes a toll on everything else.
Emotionally as well as physically. Right. Yes.
Well, welcome back. You're looking great.
Thank you.
And can't wait to hear the hiking story today. All right. So who'd you bring with you?
Well, we brought Patrick and Karen from the
Guyton Gallery on Forest. So Karen is Karen Panasevich.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do the last name.
You nailed it on the second try.
I'm proud of you.
Well, welcome. You're the director of the gallery.
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for setting this up. Thank you for sending over all those beautiful images and the wonderful information that you did send us. Patrick is with us this morning, the amazing artist. If you've ever walked up and down Forest, that's where you stop and go, okay.
Yeah, that's
I need to walk into this gallery. Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am superlative.
All right. It's fantastic to finally meet you.
Yes. Thank you very much. And it's just really been a slow morning for me because I am pre-coffee, as we know. So I'm going to do my best to make this work.
And you know, that's my fault. I should make a pot of coffee on Friday mornings, man. I should just have a pot of coffee rolling here.
You got it.
For this time zone, you should have a little personal espresso machine here.
I think we should do that.
He might be onto something, Ed.
I think we should work something out with Jedediah up on the canyon. Maybe just have them set up here on Friday.
Awesome. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be terrific.
All right, I'll work that out. I'll get my people to get your people and we'll make it happen. Patrick, I swear, the next time you'll be caffeinated the next time you're here.
Well, you know, what's funny, when I first got published, it was like 2008, and my business partner now, publisher then, the first thing that he bought me was an espresso machine because I kept leaving the easel to go get coffee.
Right.
And so I was there and he brought this little personal espresso machine over. Right. He set it there and he said, just paint. Don't leave.
I think that's what China does with the people making our iPhones. Yeah. I'm not mistaken. So you have two galleries, right? There's not just this Laguna Beach gallery. You have another gallery.
Yeah. We opened this one in July of 2020. Okay. In Aspen, Colorado, in December of 2020.
Okay. And how do you...
Your timing is superb.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People were like, what are you...
what are you thinking?
Yeah. What is this? But actually, I knew, or if either of you knew... Lindsay Rapp that was in that space prior.
Right.
Lindsay, I've known Lindsay from Pennsylvania. So when I knew when she got the space, I was like, wow, that is a great space. I mean, you're right there at the T, on Forest.
Right.
And I thought, wow, what a great space to get when she ended up moving here. So then she was leaving and I knew she was leaving and I was like, wow, that space is going to be empty. And, The downside was that it was 2020. So,
So here it is. I'm opening a space. No one come and see it, please.
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing ever, But what's funny, when I got published, it was 2008 also.
Right.
So we were, we've always been in the midst of this like crisis
giant
mode,
recession.
And like giant leaps have happened. And so, you know, it was like, okay, well, 2008, that worked out. Right. So let's try, you know, COVID.
If we could survive a financial bubble bursting, let's see if we can survive COVID in this business. So when you have two separate galleries in two separate states, so different, how do you determine which art goes in which state?
You know, sometimes it varies with subject matter. One of the great things about the substrate that I use, I mean, I work all on gold leaf, silver leaf, copper leaf, platinum, palladium, but artistically, I love being a figurative drawer. I mean, a painter. I love doing still life stuff. I love doing abstract. I love doing rendering stuff. So I have my interests are broad spectrum, you know, wise as far as that goes. And so I always wondered about being locked into a certain type of art. You know, right. A lot of artists will get locked in.
They get pigeonholed into a certain thing. Right.
So, I mean, and for lack of understanding, you know, you don't always, or at some point you would always have to make a cottage with flowers and, you know, some smoke come out too. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's really nothing wrong with it. And it worked out really great, but you know, that would be a repetitive thing for me personally. So I wanted to choose a substrate that was the core of the art is the substrate itself. Right. And then that way I could do figurative work. I could do abstract work. I could do landscape work. Right. So depending on what, you know, what mood or what things came out of the studio that day, that's depending on where it would end up going.
All right. Yeah. Oh, very well explained. That makes sense. And you mentioned how, like what you brought in is copper laced, right? Or
copper leafing, pure copper leafing. And, if you go by the gallery or people strolling by, there's usually something copper in there that's done this way. And I do the patina myself. I used to be a sign painter for many, many, many years. My dad was a sign painter. So I learned a lot of sign painting, like aging techniques and this and that. And we did a lot of that kind of thing. And I adopt a lot of what I learned in sign painting to what I do here. And so this is, the patinas are all naturally done by me, you know, and hands-on patina. I found a way to get it done quickly rather than, you know, setting a bunch of things outside and waiting for months to come by. No, it's perfect, you know. So I do it. I have a way to do it rather quickly. And then this particular piece is then overlaid in pure gold around the face and that kind of a thing.
When you do that, when you work with silver, pure silver or gold or platinum or palladium or something like, is it easy or possible to ruin the image?
Oh, very much so. Yes. Okay. Anything so delicate like that, as you can imagine, and anyone who's seen gold leaf or any type of leafing like that, it, especially when you get more into like the platinums or the metals that are really soft and very, very, very expensive.
Right.
I had to actually go to my supplier and tell him, I want platinum. I want pure platinum. He says, well, I can get a high karat gold that's coated in platinum. I said, no, I want absolute smashed out platinum, 100%.
You're immediately on a watch list after you ask for pure platinum.
You know? You would be surprised, especially with some of the chemicals I get off Amazon. They come in these big bags of white powder to my shop, and it's like, you know, big black SUVs parked outside, you know, doing the binoculars. But a lot of the time, with like especially with platinum, my supplier guy, he had to find it, one, then he finds it, and then I have to put down, you know, this massive deposit for them to start making it, because there's not just a store that stocks pure platinum sheets on a shelf somewhere. Right. So then I wait maybe sometimes half a year before I get it, and then, you know, I'll get a little box, and it's like, don't even look at it. You know? just put it over there.
That's why I mentioned to our listeners to go to your website, check out your stuff before you came on to see the intricacy of what you do, man, and how easy it could be to ruin a great painting like that. Yeah. You mentioned Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You went to the Pittsburgh Art Institute for Sculpture and Design Theory.
Yes.
How does that help on what we're looking at right there? What did that teach you?
Well, those were two of the main things of study, but this was back when the Art Institute, and I believe they've canceled the fine art program as of a few years back due
brutal.
To lack of interest is what I, because I used to refer a lot of people to the program and they would, you know, get back with me and say, oh, they don't have that. I'm like, well, what do you mean you don't have that? But I ended up contacting them, and they said, yeah, lack of interest. They just canceled the entire fine art program. So now, they still have digital art, right. Fashion, photography, and right. I think cooking now is their thing.
Right.
But when I went, it was still literally the core basics of fine art and like, you know, sculpting and, right. and all the renderings and anatomy and figure drawing and, you know, from watercolor classes to architectural rendering and, you know, that kind of thing every day. So that's kind of what gave me the start, because after high school, I moved to Washington, D.C. in Silver Spring, Maryland for a little bit. And I drove a truck for a furniture company, and I broke down on the Beltway.
Right.
If anyone's been on the Beltway yeah. around D.C., you think the 91 is bad, yeah. you know?
Yeah. Try breaking down on the Beltway, right.
So I broke down on the Beltway on the way back from picking up some furniture in North Carolina, and I'm sitting there, broke down on the Beltway, surrounded by traffic. I radio in, and a truck to come in and help me and do all that was about 3 hours out based on the traffic and all that. So I'm sitting there, and I literally had that moment epiphany. I was like, you know, I think I'm going to go to art school. Literally, right there on the Beltway in D.C. So I went back and did the art school thing. And then, and I think that has it's a big part to do with them canceling a program like that, like a fine arts program. Because after the program, they would always have like a job hiring fair.
Right.
And I was trying at that time, and this is all way, you know, before computers, you know, were took over everything in that regard, but right. I was trying to go for like magazine retouch, like photo retouching.
Right.
So I studied a lot of like hyperrealism and realism stuff like that, and in hopes of doing magazine photo retouch and all that kind of thing. So, you know, you can't. It's hard to. How would you offer someone a job to do that after they finish the program? Right. You know, what are you going to do? Who's coming in for these types of things anymore? So right after that, I ended up going on the road and moving to California in 1987, right. And just going it, because I also have done music ever since I was a kid too. So that was my main pursuit in life. So I wanted to get the art school kind of back pocket, and then I moved to California pursuing music. Right. And you know, for anyone who's been around, you know, Orange County for a long time, I ended up. I played with multiple number of bands back in the days, you know, the OC music days. But right. then I ended up getting in with Leatherwolf, which Leatherwolf was the, you know, and still is pretty much right. you know, Orange County staple band. And I played with them for 30 years, you know, right. 89, late 89. And I stepped out in 2019.
The feeling you have as you're painting an image, the feeling yeah. you have as you're putting an image together,
yeah.
can you equate that with the feeling you have as you're making music?
Yeah, pretty much so. Yeah. I mean, there are two different things, you know. It's a whole different like type of gratification that you can get personally from creating art to, or you know, music is more in the moment, you know, so to speak. But art is something that can go to someone's house. And that they can, you know, enjoy and
it's your posterity you're creating.
Yeah, it's a different length of time for something to exist for somebody, and that's the part of that I like a lot. That that just over the years, people still come and show me pictures of the piece that they bought. You know, some people it's weird when we do shows and stuff. They'll come, and I mean, at this point, there's collectors that have they're 15, 20, 25 paintings deep into this work. I'm just like blown away.
You're collected in well over 40 countries at this point. Yeah, Karen?
Yeah, I was going to say, Patrick, when people message us on our Facebook page, oftentimes they'll snap pictures of their walls and I share them with Patrick. They've got walls and walls and walls of Guyton work, and it's remarkable. I had a woman who says every morning she walks down the steps and she sees her Guyton hanging on the wall. She's 80-some years old and just brings her tears.
Okay, I'm going to pull this up.
Yeah.
I could easily see all of those images on my wall. So if the listeners are looking at the same page I am that I drove you to earlier, I could easily see all of those images on my wall.
Right.
Now, let's take a look at some of those. There's a depth to your paintings. There's a depth to your art.
Yeah.
And I can almost feel the fabric. I'm going to point right here. That one right there. I can almost feel the fabric on that beautiful woman's face. Tell me about the magic of making, first of all, a beautiful image like the face, and then the fabric.
Okay, there's the approach that I wanted to go with when I was looking at this and thinking, what is the idea? How does it work? Especially because most of what I do is original paintings. I do have and have been able to, in recent years, do partial mixed medias. But most of what I have is original painting. So it's painting after painting after painting after painting after painting. Right. So I had to develop and work a system in that. So in the mid-90s, a friend of mine, Martin, who had like one of the coolest jobs I ever even heard of, especially coming right out of art school and moving to California, is he worked for the Chuck Jones or Linda Jones studio.
I couldn't wait to get into this. I swear I couldn't, man.
So to hone this back to your question, I mean, because it is where it stems from, but he calls me one day and he said, hey, you need to get whatever you're doing, stop doing it. Get in your car and drive to Irvine right now because they need a background artist here at the studio. And those are those left field like calls that are like, I don't understand anything I'm doing, right? I'm just getting keys and I'm getting in my, you know, and I'm driving down the 55 just in bewilderment, you know? And so I get there and they told me what they were looking for and to do. And I go and I paint this painting and I bring it back, a background painting. And when I brought it back and they loved it, they took it. And they used that demo piece as the first piece. So if anyone collects animation art, that piece was called A Friend in Need. And it's basically all the Looney Tunes dogs playing poker. Right. Like the dogs playing the classic, right. You know, dogs poker thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And but it's all the Looney Tunes dogs. So the background to that is the first one I ever did with Chuck Jones. So that bled into I did. Then they sent me up and I did work with like Hanna-Barbera and some of the other Looney Tunes directors and Charles McKemson and Jr. and all these. So I learned. Especially through a lot of the Hanna-Barbera stuff, is they're so systematic on how the work is to be done because they have random people doing backgrounds or cells, right. Animation cells. So once I started studying this formula of how to stay within parameters and do repetitive things to get the same looking results, I started implementing that in what I was doing here and trying to stick with my with a working rotation of how I approach things, right. And so that's one of the main things I would say was a huge factor in being able to paint so much of this is sticking with a certain
formula that worked,
formula right. And regiment as right. Far as making it.
It is fantastic, and I hope I'm not too nerdy in thinking that's what I'm the most impressed with. Man, yeah, I swear, no, man. Like, whoa, dude, everything else.
That was. An incredible time. It was, I think, 6 years right before he passed away, right. And we were doing work all the way up until that time, the entire time I was just tripping out. But through that time, I got to meet Maurice Noble, who was from Disney fame. Right. So I'm sitting here with these like legendary guys, right. Maurice Noble did
Disney Warner as well. Like,
Snow White, the Seven Dwarfs. Right, I mean, we're talking like
the big deal,
historical people here, Yeah. And so I did one project was with Chuck and Maurice on the same one where they recreated a scene from What's Opera, Doc?
Right. It was the only cartoon to win an Oscar, right? Bugs Bunny.
I think it's in the what do you call? Oh my God, I'm blanking out.
It's in the American National Film Institute.
Film Registry. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The Film Registry. Yeah. I think it was the only animation. Film, I mean, considered one of the greatest pieces, if not the greatest piece of animation ever made by those two guys.
It is the only piece of animation that is saved in the American Film Registry.
Yeah, exactly.
Period. And it's
So for the induction.
Take some money out of petty cash right now.
So, the induction ceremony, Maurice, he had arthritis. He was, you know, he's going through a hard time with his hands. He couldn't do the recreation of the background scene from the thing. So I got to do, to go and sit with him. He instructed on how to make it, how he wanted it, how, what to use, where to use it. I mean, basically, he was the conductor. I was the orchestra.
It's like,
you know,
a master class.
Yes. It was like, 100%. Exactly. So, you know, my wife and I were driving up to his house and sitting there with him. So it wasn't just like a quick little thing. So we actually, you know, we were hanging out. I was going up there, like checking this. And I would purposely do little bits of changes at a time just so he can go hang out more. You know? How about this? I change, move this flower a little bit over here. So, you know, so that piece ended up being the induction piece. And so I was a huge, like, honor. Like, I'm still blown away to this day.
Yeah, about that. And I'm blown away hearing it. That's great. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the images we just looked at, these are all beautiful people. They're absolutely magnificent. Not just the imagery themselves, but the people in them. Yeah. Would you ever find yourself putting someone unattractive on a canvas
or unattractive? I think it's necessary. Yeah, I think it's necessary because, you know, one, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, you know, so is there really, you
me,
know,
for instance, Ed, we put you on a canvas.
Well, let's not get crazy, Ed.
Oddly enough, you know what? You guys were just talking about Las Vegas. Oddly enough, that piece that you pointed out was bought by one of the tribes. It's
in right the casinos.
Now, it's in one of the tribal centers.
Oh.
And they bought it for the tribal center. But
very cool.
But, you know, getting back to that question of the faces and the fabric, like I was trying to remember why I was saying it, but the whole animation cell thing, if you look at it, it kind of has that same thing where you had the animation cell, which is the transparent with a opaque, you know, image on it, which then lays on top of a painted background or printed background.
Right.
So I wanted to take that same type of vibe where when you look at these, you see so much of the fabric that is transparent, but then in this particular case or in the figurative case you saw there, the face is all opaque.
Right.
So it's still that juxtaposition of opaque and transparent working together, and instead of a printed background or something like that, the background is actually the gold or the silver or the copper.
I'm going to tell the listeners, the local listeners, if you haven't yet stopped by the gallery, you need to stop by the gallery at some point and check it out, man.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, then this morning, check it out online. Karen?
Yeah, we're at 266 Forest Avenue, right between Rock Martin and Duet. We have fabulous neighbors. Our gallery, we're in the best spot.
It is a great spot.
It's just so sweet, and lots of foot traffic, but please do come by. We're open every day, 7 days a week.
And are we planning anything through the summer? Are we going to do something special, a party, or what are we doing in the summer here?
Yes, well, we're part of First Walk.
Art Walk.
First Thursdays.
And we'd like to have a ribbon cutting, and I know we sort of touched on that in the past, so we probably need to get together on that.
We're looking at first week of June or so.
Okay.
Very cool. We discussed that yesterday. Okay. So we're already on it.
That'd be great.
And before I let you go, as beautiful as the image you brought in today, I'm also struck by the framing. How important is framing of your work?
I keep with this framing and just to keep a nice unified look within the gallery. So, I mean, this framing to me works good because it's not overly blingy. I mean, and you can put any frames you want on artwork, but to me, I like a darker, you know, image around there because it just highlights the glow of the piece. So these are like a black leather trimmed with a kind of, I don't know what you would call that, kind of a gunmetal-ish inner fillet.
Well done. Beautifully framed.
Thank you very much, as well as
beautifully put together.
Yeah.
Paula, thank you again for doing this.
Yeah, you bet.
So cool. We've been speaking this morning with Patrick Guyton, the galleries up on Forest, and Karen Panasevich.
Yes.
Boom. Through twice in a row. Bang, bang, bang. Give us the address again, Karen.
We're at 266 Forest Avenue, right in the heart where Glenier and Forest meet.
All right. Patrick, make sure you come by here again. Let's do something with music next time you're here. Let's get you in here and we'll do some songs together.
I would love that.
Delighted to have this conversation.
Thank you so much for being in.
Paula, thank you again. 826 the time. Lisa Farber, Laguna Beach Vibe, LagunaNow.com up next.